Hello and welcome to Inbound Raleigh, a podcast about transit in the city of Oaks. I'm James.
And I'm Jennifer. Today on our show, we're talking about Fortify NC. That's the name of the project on Interstate 40. Right now, this is the section just south of Raleigh. If you drive that way, you've probably noticed that there's some construction going on. But the good news is we are in the home stretch.
Yeah, that's right. This week, you should be noticing some major changes out there. And I live off Capitol, so I've noticed these changes while they've been happening. And very excited to see the final product. So today we're joined by Steve Abbott from the North Carolina Department of Transportation, who can tell you more about it. Welcome, Steve.
Oh, thank you for the invite.
Yeah, so Steve, let's start by giving some background on this project for our listeners who are lucky enough who, you know, don't have to make this drive. What's going on out there?
Well, this was a chemical reaction. The road basically was falling apart. This section of 40 and a section of 440 that people may not remember was actually also part of Fortify, going from 40 up to the Interstate 495. And that was actually done, rebuilt first to provide an alternate route for people who didn't want to go on 40 at all. So, for example, if you live in Johnston County and you want to go to the airport or you work at RTP, you've never seen the project. Hopefully, you've gone around 440 to the north. But that, of course, has increased traffic on 440 itself. And that's one of the ways we've known that it's been a success, because traffic on 440 has greatly increased over the life of the project. But what was happening under the road back 30, 40 years ago, the mixture that was used to make the roadway, it's called it's an alkali silica reaction. It's ASR for short, and some people call it concrete cancer. Because the two chemicals, it's like a silica and like a concrete sort of a paste, over time didn't play well together. When they got wet, they started to crumble and expand and move around, and they were pushing up and breaking up the pavement. Folks that have been longtime commuters on 40 will have noticed several years before the project started, a lot more potholes, a lot more cracks. We were spending $7 to $8 million a year just patching that constantly. So that's why the decision was made. We've got to fix this, and we can't really wait 2 or 3 years, because there may be whole sections that crumble, and then we'd have long-term closures and different projects to fix. It's not a issue that was just on 40. A lot of projects around the country, not just highway. RDU's main runway has the same issue, and they've had it for quite a while, and it's slowly but surely they've kept an eye on it. And I think just earlier this year, they started the process. They're going to build a new main runway next to the old one if they get permission from the feds, and use the old runway as a taxiway so it doesn't have to be quite as smooth. But they have the same issue at airports. Some airports have had to replace runways.
Wow. So I guess this silica paste and concrete mix was pretty in vogue as material 30 years ago or so, or
exactly. And it wasn't even every project. It just was chemicals, depending on where some of the materials came from, if it came from a certain location, and just the makeup was different of that material. And it just didn't mix very well, and it lasted quite a while. I don't know when they first noticed it on 40 starting to go. Going back to RDU, they've noticed it 14 years ago. There was a problem. So we've obviously noticed it probably back in the 2010, give or take, because that's when we noticed we had more and more repairs, rougher road, potholes coming up, and then we had to start hiring people to go out, a contractor almost every night, and patching as long as we could. And then when you get into wintertime, when we can't do the real good patching because of the weather, you had soft patching, and that's why the road is rough, and we heard a lot of complaints back then.
Okay. So what's the process for how this all works? Can you kind of walk us through a rough sketch of what's going on?
Well, since this is the substructure that's falling apart, we basically have rebuilt all the way to the dirt. The contractor dug out the entire road to the dirt, and then even then we found some issues, which helped extend the time it's taken to do this, because if the dirt underneath wasn't draining right, and there's other issues there, so they've had to even dig even into the dirt to replace the dirt, and then rebuild the road from the dirt up. And that's where it's sort of a weird thing that I'm not a chemist, but I understand one of the machines we have out there is a crusher. So once we get the bad asphalt and everything else, it goes in a crusher and gets pulverized. We can use it again. So this is a very green project. We've recycled most of the roadway.
Wow.
And basically the crushed rock gets placed back down along the bed and smooth it out. Then you have layers, and then you smooth it out. If anybody's driven by, they've seen it change. There's a couple big piles of sand there now because it's a sand layer that goes down. And then you have different layers of asphalt and have to make sure it's down perfectly. And even now, what's going down there for the new rebuilt lanes, that's not the final surface. There'll be another surface. So we can go with that a little bit later, just what's coming up after all the lanes are open.
Hmm. Yeah, you mentioned the crusher, and one of the things I always enjoy about these big highway jobs is some of the equipment and the machinery they use out there. So the crusher is the one that looks like it's sort of eating the pavement then as it goes along. Okay.
Well, no, that's the it's the biggest one is a badger breaker, and that's like a giant guillotine for asphalt, and it's or a sledgehammer. What it is, it's driven, and it drops anywhere from 10 feet to wherever they have to crush. And as soon as we would close lanes, like if we moved you to the inside lanes, it would be in the outside lanes and just pulverizing the asphalt and breaking it up.
Yeah.
And that's where it's very loud. No, because it's a slam, and working its way down the highway. And that breaks up the asphalt into pieces so bulldozers and things can get the smaller pieces. And then those get dropped in the crusher and almost like a paper shredder in a way. And that's the cool things that we've noticed people even slow down because you – first, the noise, and if you drive by when it's crushing, it'll vibrate the roadway. Even the road you're on will vibrate a little bit. And then the crushers, you know, the cool thing is it's almost spitting out smaller pieces.
Yeah.
And that's what's helped them to do a lot of recycling. That thing will even eat rebar, metal rebar that might be thrown in there. You don't want to fall in like a tree grinder like in Fargo or something. You don't want to do that. You'll be part of the roadway.
I was going to say, this is going to be in some horror movie sometime soon.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's the two big things. And then that gives them the raw supply they need to start putting down the roadbed.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so I think you mentioned it a second ago, but does the DOT have its own crews or you contract this work out?
This is something big enough. We have a contractor. It's Granite Construction. They're based out of Tampa. They're a worldwide real big company. I mean, they have mega projects. They recently got one for Pennsylvania DOT to replace 600 bridges.
Wow.
So that's a big company. They're also the company that built 540, the Triangle Expressway. So they had some experience here, and I'm sure they're going to be looking for some other projects because we have other major projects coming up. So they bring in specialists, and then they have their designers and all this kind of thing. And then they bring in subcontractors. Like the crusher is not theirs. It's a company that operates and owns the crusher. The badger breaker is the same kind of thing. They just hire all kinds of contractors and subcontractors, which is why even though we hired a non-North Carolina contractor, they're hiring all kinds of subcontractors, mostly local, and then their people have to rent apartments, buy food, and basically live in the Triangle. So that's why, you know, we sometimes get calls, you should just give your contracts to a North Carolina company. Well, the two reasons we don't, A, we have to give it to the lowest bidder, and it wouldn't make financial sense if, say, it's a $200 million project, and the North Carolina company will do it for $220 and the out-of-state for $200.
Yeah.
Why should we spend $20 million in taxpayer money? And even if it's the out-of-state, they're going to hire a lot of in-state business, buying supplies. They hire all kinds of the companies that supply the raw materials. So the money gets spent, most of it, in North Carolina.
Okay. And I can't imagine there's too many companies nationwide that could even handle projects. I mean, you mentioned the 600 bridges in Pennsylvania. So it's got to be a huge company to be able to handle something of this scale or scope. So I imagine there's only a few of them nationwide, or are there a lot more than I would think?
There's quite a few because you picture how many highway projects, 50 states and some overseas and so forth.
True.
In this case, this is a design build project. So they're the constructors, but they also have companies that are designers and so forth. We even have had companies who've started to move in, set up offices in the Triangle because we do have two or three huge projects coming up. And so a company out of Texas that's doing a couple projects nearby. In fact, they're doing the Capitol Bridge project and so forth, because it gives them familiarity with the DOT staff in the area. So when they go to bid, we have experience. Oh, we know that company. Now that'll help a little bit, but it's going to be the bid. It's going to be the cost. And there's other big companies that are starting to come in. And that's the good news. The bad news, they come in and they're stealing a lot of DOT employees, the engineers and stuff. So we've had quite a few turnover. So we lose those people. But again, then we're working with people that we know the DOT system, a contractor for a different smaller project, the ramp meter project coming up on 540. The person who's in charge of that for the contractor used to be a resident engineer here in Raleigh. So we all know them. And you can usually work better with someone you had a relationship with.
Sure. Something I think people will really notice is the on and off ramps for exits. Those are going to be extended, and that's going to make things not only easier for us drivers, but safer, correct?
That is correct. It'll look to the average driver like we widened 40, but we haven't added any lanes. But what we're doing is we're building connector lanes. If someone who's lives down Cary Apex and comes up US 1 and gets on US 1 at Cary Parkway and wants to get off at Walnut, you just stay on the ramp and just keep, you have your own lane all the way. You don't get into travel lanes. Well, we're going to do that as well for US 1, between US 1 and Gorman Street, and then between Gorman and Lake Wheeler. And so those folks, even though it's technically not an added lane, but you don't have to merge into the busy lane. You can just stay where you are and get off the next lane, and that'll both be in the east and westbound side. So that'll help all the commuters. If you're going from US 1 to NC State, you won't have to get on, and you want to go that way, you can just go down and get off at Gorman, or if you want to go on down to Lake Wheeler, if you're going to the farmer's market, or if, another way to go downtown, obviously, you can go that way and get off pretty easily and don't have to go all the way down to South Saunders. And then we're extending a few of the ramps to help with the acceleration on and off.
Okay. And this might surprise some people, but the project got started about 3 years ago. Is that right?
That's right. It started 2013 with the 440 section. And they did a little bit of work in 40, but it just seemed like a long time when you're caught in traffic and so forth. And we did have to, it would have been completed earlier, but we did change things because the original plan was the contractor was only required to keep two lanes open in each direction, and which would have made, imagine what that'd be like, you know, you see traffic now. And then it was determined that if something happened, if there was a major crash or something, traffic could be backed up, from the eastbound, could go to Durham for all we knew. So the DOT secretary at the time said, I'm not going to sign off on that unless you redesign it for three lanes. And most of that stretch, that 8.5 mile stretch, was three lanes anyway. So we didn't change the capacity for a lot of the roadway. So the contractor and his designers, their designers, had to go back and redesign the whole thing, which added some time to it, added cost to it, because we had to pay them for their time. And sure, because it's a longer process with three lanes, because they've actually had to shift things around, and you had to keep three lanes open, so you couldn't move everybody over to two lanes and work on the other lane. So that took longer to do.
I'm sure most commuters would agree that that was probably worth the money.
Exactly. It's much because the visions of two lanes some of the projects we're doing rebuild on Business 40 in Winston-Salem, and those folks there agreed they're closing down Business 40.
Oh, wow.
And so they can do the project a lot faster because you don't have to have safety hazards and move barriers and so forth. But that obviously was not an option to close 40 down and make everybody on 440, because then that would be bumper to bumper. So I teasingly suggested that to the engineer, and I was told to get out of his office. So that didn't go well.
Yeah.
Well, you had mentioned earlier that since the project started, traffic on 440 has gotten a lot worse. Now, I've only lived in Raleigh for about 7 years, and 40 has always been kind of bad, at rush hour. But 440 is just dramatic. Do you have any kind of figures offhand? Not exact, of course, but just ballpark of how much it has increased, really.
We don't have specific on 440, but we know that enough cars, enough folks followed all our push to alternate routes, public transit, telecommuting and all that, because we had anticipated to be about a 30-minute, a longer trip each way going through the whole 8.5 miles. And it's been 15 minutes on average, sometimes even less than that.
Wow.
Now, part of that problem has been that people are going too fast still, but otherwise that shows traffic has dramatically gone to 440. City of Raleigh has mentioned that traffic on Capitol Boulevard has increased greatly for people going up there.
Oh, yeah.
So we've noticed the side roads are getting busy. But since it hasn't been a real major issue that we've had to adjust things on 440. In fact, knowing that 440 was going to be tough, before any of Fortify started, we went back and refortified and resurfaced 440. The bridges were redone, so we wouldn't require any maintenance work during the life of the Fortify project. Because you can imagine if we said, okay, we're going to go out and resurface and redo this between Six Forks and Capitol or something, and none of it's needed because it was done just before Fortify started, anticipating much heavier traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were going to ask about that, actually, because it's usually 120,000 cars on that section. So it's good that those efforts worked. So the big news this week, or maybe it was last week, is that we're shifting into our final pattern. And this was all based on weather, of course. Mm-hmm. So how is all that going so far?
that's going, it's not quite as smooth as we had hoped to, because the part of the plan was we have to put up some permanent signs when they do that, and those signs aren't ready yet. So the shifting is taking place, opening up the outside lanes, and it's taking place sort of backwards in the westbound lanes first from Gorman back to the split, or the 440 split, which is in southeast Raleigh. So you're being moved to the outside lanes, but we're not able to open the whole thing yet. But as soon as the signs are, it'll be opening up. But we're getting in, you're back on new roadway again, going all the way back. And the reason we started at Gorman, because west of Gorman Street, it was always been three lanes. So you still have three lanes. And the big thing also, if you've driven through there, the concrete barriers are going. And that's been a big hindrance and also issues, because people get very nervous driving between the barriers. And also, if you do run into problems, there's nowhere to go except for a barrier or another car. That's going away. So we started doing that, I guess, late last week, moving the barriers, getting the lanes out of the way. Also, an advantage for the places that still have the barriers is the lane striping that has to be done. If we can get that during the day and then just move the barriers, and you just, as soon as the barriers are moved, you move the traffic and you're done. So it was going to take, probably going to take about 10 shifts overnight to get that section from Gorman back to the split done. And then they're going to go over on the other side when it's ready and do that as well. So we think people see a dramatic improvement in terms of travel time and so forth. We're just, the issue that we have with that is you're going to be tempted to speed, which is not a good thing, because that's probably one of the biggest issues out there.
Well, you know, I'm glad to hear that I'm not the only one that's freaked out driving by those barriers, because that's the scariest thing for me on the road is when I'm, I don't know why, just being right next to that makes me very nervous.
It makes a lot of people nervous. And the other thing, again, if somebody swerves or something, blows a tire, no, there's no shoulders except for a couple locations for emergency pullover. So you're going into the wall. And that's where most of our crashes have been, either fender benders or side swiping like that. And that's, a lot of that has been speed, inattentiveness. We had one person looked at his watch and looked up, and the traffic had slowed in front of him, and he was going too fast. I tell people, and we've actually tried to get some media news stories, if you get in the center lane, either direction, and go 60 miles an hour, count how many cars pass you on either side. Those cars are speeding. And it's a short stint. We know it. I'm probably guilty myself sometimes, because I use 40 East to get to work, that if it's open, I'm on an interstate. I shouldn't have to go 60, but things all of a sudden slows down. And so that's the one we're going to reemphasize, the safety. We know it's tempting to go faster, but if you can hold on just a little bit longer, we'll get that speed limit up for you.
Yeah, I definitely have that as something to ask about, because I drive that stretch quite a bit, and I don't see too many people driving 60 miles an hour, which is what's posted.
Exactly.
Except me, because I'm a little nervous and I often have a kid in the car. Mm-hmm. So have you got any data? Have there definitely been an increase in accidents, kind of fender benders?
There has been an increase in accidents, and luckily there's been no major spectacular crashes. We had one a couple months ago, a FedEx truck jackknifed in the rain and blocked lanes, but that driver got cited because the truck had mostly bald tires.
Whoops.
And that's a lot of that comes up. And we do track, we get the police reports in to see the causes, and we do a monthly meeting to analyze, okay, why were crashes up here? We say, well, that's when there was a lot of snow and ice, or that's when the rain came, or whatever. And we can look at each one of the crash reports and see, okay, driver cited for going too fast. In fact, in the case of that tractor-trailer crash, there was a small emergency detour route along the work zone, and someone crashed there and got cited for going too fast on the detour route.
Oh, wow.
And so we do check that, and then if a pattern develops that we say, okay, there seems to be a lot of this kind of crash in this area, we go back out and see, is there something improved striping, or can we move something around? So we do study that, but there has been an increase from previous times, and it's mostly speed and inattentiveness is probably about 75%, because somebody's going too fast and something changes. We had one where the center lane was open and cars on both sides were both trying to merge in there, but they didn't hit each other. They saw each other and went back to their lanes, but the car on the right, when he moved back, he looked away, looked up, and they had slowed in front of him.
Oh, no.
So he comes in, hits the brakes, and does a little fender bender in front of him.
You know, I see that way more than I thought than I used to, I guess, when I'm driving, is two people trying to merge into the same lane. I don't know if it's maybe increase in inattentiveness. You know, I see everyone's on their phones when I look over. So
I think it's, and I've seen the same thing if you have, it's also because if you're in a little bit of a jam, you're always looking for that lane. There's a lot of, you know, instead of the old days when you stayed in your right lane unless you wanted to pass, you see a lot of people going from the inside fast lane. They're looking, you're almost like a race car. Yeah. They're leapfrogging along that way, and they're looking and swear, okay, let's go in here for a little while. Wait a minute, that lane, slow down. Let's go in the outside lane. Yeah. They're going back and forth, you know, because everybody's in a hurry these days.
Yeah, and one thing that we've heard, and I'm sure you probably get this a lot, and I don't know how you the best way you respond to it, but I think a lot of people assume that means there's going to be more lanes when the project is finished, and I assume that's what a lot of people, their expectation is, and what do you tell them?
To other lanes would have meant we would have had to buy some right-of-way, and there's a lot of streams we had to do in probably those couple of years. So what we did, wow, we built these connector lanes, interstate depth, which means even though they're a shoulder, when you have an interstate shoulder, it doesn't interstate, you know, 15 feet of whatever it might be. These shoulders are. So whatever it might be, these lanes are built already. So we'll have to expand a little bit, like net one. Let's say we expand it by two lanes on both sides. Well, especially between Lake Wheelock. So that's the main reason why we didn't do that. Ideally, if you're going to put people through the action thing, you do a lot of work that you don't have to go back there for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm sure we are. Weekend next week. And then what are the final steps? When is this all done?
Final steps, everything shifted over. We still have another shift. There's one section of the roadway that has 40 East as you're approaching US 1, what I call the clover leaf. It's not a clover. Finally, all the inside lanes will be open. And then as soon as we move people on the inside, like they're thinking that we'll start switching late this month or early July, we'll start switching the eastbound side. And then late August, maybe, have everybody switched over. And then depending on when Labor Day is coming up and so forth, then we have to go back out and we'll do resurfacing the whole thing. We've seen some complaints. You know, they people have switched to the newly built lanes, and they say this because it's still a rough ride a little bit. And also, when you go to a bridge, it's not even with the bridge because bridges have been built for the final paving, but the roadway hasn't. So we remind people that that's not the final product. They're going to go out and resurface the entire thing, put down permanent reflective lane striping, put down the snow plowable markers, the reflective markers down there. They'll be doing that in September and October. You can only do that at night because we have to close lanes to do that. We're not allowed to close lanes during the daytime. So we're thinking probably late October, November, if Mother Nature cooperates, the whole thing will be done in terms of the roadway. And then the project itself, because they're going to go back and do revegetation, other issues. They have that asphalt plant over at 440 at the split. No, in theory, that should be torn down and replanted. But if that company gets one of the other projects, they might see, hey, can we keep this up here? Do we hear? Because that's been a big plus for them, having their own plant.
Oh, yeah.
Because, although there are smaller asphalt plants, almost all of them close over the winter because it's too cold. I mean, usually we don't do any paving from, say, November to March because of the weather. But if we got a warm stretch for a week or two in November, they could fire up their own plant and bring stuff in. So that's helped quite a bit. And that's an advantage for that company doing that, which you don't see that very often.
All right. So it sounds like by the end of the year, we'll...
Oh, hopefully it better be before the end of the year, because sometime in 2018, we are going to add or going to expand 40 from the end of Fortify down to 42.
Okay.
So that's going to be added to it. That won't be as invasive because we're not going to be tearing up the road. We're just going to be expanding it. And if folks who commute that way have noticed, there is a lane built now down there that is cordoned off.
Yeah, didn't that used to be open?
It was open for a while, and then we determined that so many people were using it, and then
it created a bottleneck.
When they were either, they weren't just merging at the end, ideally, they were cutting over anywhere, so you basically had a lot of stop and go. And it doesn't make sense to me or other folks, for the most part, except engineers. By closing a lane, we improved the travel time and speed through there. It's just because they didn't have people.
No, I believe it. Because coming back from the beach on weekends, you'd see all this backup.
Exactly. So that lane's already built, and that was built quite a while ago, anticipating we know we're going to expand this road eventually. And since it was built, that saves us money because we don't have to, when we do hire a contractor, they only have to add a lane here or something. It's a little less to do. And that's part of the thing for the Fortify. When we do expand it, we can tell the contractor, we're going to expand it by, you know, three lanes, but two of them are built already, so we just need a lane and a shoulder.
Yeah.
And that'll help us with a lot of the work that we're doing there. So there's, it's a busy, busy place, and we have 440 coming, complete 540s coming down the road, so to speak.
I'm sure we'll have you back to ask about that.
So there's a lot of work for those. You asked earlier about the construction companies.
Yeah.
They see dollar signs because there's well over $1 billion worth of work coming.
All right. Wow. Well, real quick, while I have you here, too, sure. You mentioned before we started Capitol Boulevard Bridge project, you've got a closing this weekend, right?
Right. Basically, Capitol Boulevard southbound will be closed at the Wade Avenue Bridge for the weekend. It won't be a major, it'll be a closure, but the detour will be simply going up the exit ramp like you're going onto Wade Avenue going west. And then they're going to have something there. There'll be law enforcement there. And you're just going to cross over Wade and get on the ramp you would use to go from Wade onto Capitol. So you'll have to slow dramatically down. You won't be flying down Capitol like you normally will. So slow down, you might have to stop because if somebody's coming down Wade Avenue and wants to go on Capitol North, there'll be a traffic cop stopping you on the ramp. Said, hold up. Somebody goes by. Go ahead.
Okay.
So, and that's to replace the roadway under the bridge. So if you travel through there, it's pretty bumpy and so forth. It'll be a lot smoother ride.
Nice.
And that way they can do that. And when they do replace the bridge and so forth, that we don't have to do that work once the bridge is replaced and so forth. And then the fun starts when we go to the Peace Street Bridge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'll be a great time. Good luck, everybody.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Steve, from the North Carolina DOT for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Sure.
You can stay up to date this summer on the project at fortifync.com, and you can also follow NCDOT on Twitter. They actually have multiple accounts, and we'll link to some of that information in our show notes, and you can find all that at inboundraleigh.com.
And you can help out our show by leaving a review of us on Google Play or iTunes. Or if you know someone who likes to geek out about transportation in Raleigh, please tell them to subscribe.
That's right. We're always looking for new listeners. And we also want to hear what you think of our show, along with your ideas for topics. Some of you have sent some good ones in, and I promise we are working on those. So please email us at inboundraleigh@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And our handle on all those platforms is inboundraleigh. Thank you again, and catch you next time.